now, this weekend, this Saturday indeed, will see the unveiling of a plaque in memory of Michael T. Costello, Civil War veteran, the last attack of the Civil War. And with me in our studio here to talk about this in more detail is Hawley Costello. Hawley, now living in Glen, originally from Ballyhorgan, Lixna. Hawley, good morning to you.
Morning.
Your father was shot outside the church in Lixna on the 26th of August, 1923, 100th anniversary. Tell me the story, first of all, for those who are not aware of it.
Well, the general election was on the 27th, so this was 26th on the Sunday, so it was the last chance for canvassing that went on. And there was a big rally by the pro-treaty crowd outside of Mass in Lixna on the Sunday. Now, my father had been involved. He was with the anti-treaty side, we'll say. And there was quite a lot of them were around the Lixna area at the time. I said mainly because the fishing rights had not been established for the locals. It was controlled by the local landlord, George Houston, in a small house.
Right.
And to make matters worse, I'd say one of the people canvassing for the pro-treaty was the Minister for Fisheries at the time, Finan Murphy.
Right.
So that was like a red rag to a bull, I'd say, for the anti-treaty crowd. And they turned out in force. And my father admitted straight out that he was one of the chief hecklers against the people up in the trailer.
And these were tense times, obviously, just in the immediate aftermath of the Civil War.
Aftermath, yes. So anyway, when the meeting was over, a man from the stage who had spoken, a Tralee man, I won't mention his name, will I?
No, go on.
He got off the trailer and walked up to my father from point blank range, shot him through the chest, and he obviously dropped down, and he was... Will I carry on?
But you can, yes.
He was carted across the road into the dispensary, and there were two doctors attending him, and he was unconscious, as they thought. And he told me himself afterwards he could hear every word, actually, when they were unconscious, they could still hear. So he had the two doctors saying, this fellow's a goner, we can't do anything with him. And by pure chance, a woman that was at Mass, a nurse, came in, and she said, give me a chance at him, because I was walking in the trenches in the 1418 war. I've seen injuries like this.
My God. She had the experience.
And by pure chance. So she took over, and I think there was a bit of an operation done there, and then they got out some of the bullet, and she stopped the my father told me that every time he'd breathe, just bubbles coming out through his chest, and she
stopped the bleeding internally.
Bleeding and held it up, and saved his life, obviously.
Incredible.
Yes.
Unbelievable. How long? Now, your father lived until he was 86. Fragments of the bullet remained.
Well, in his lungs, ever after.
Ever after.
Ever after. Every time he went for an extra, there was something showing up, spots. But he knew very well it was just lead.
My God.
And there was no lead poisoning. You'd think that there'd be lead poisoning, but it didn't.
Luckily enough, it didn't.
Uh-huh.
Incredible. Now, did he talk about this afterwards? Or like others in the Civil War, was it?
Incident in detail, like, yeah. He was involved in the War of Independence as well. He took up arms. He didn't speak much about that.
Yeah.
No, he did speak about the time he was arrested. He was arrested by the Black and Tans and put into Ballymullen Barracks. He spoke about being in Ballymullen Barracks and people had been taken out at random and getting hammered and beaten, and he could hear the sounds below on the bottom. And one day he said to all the story where they were going for his cell and they just changed their minds the last second. And when they were being taken away, your man turned around to him and said, we'll be back for you tomorrow night. They didn't. Lucky enough, he didn't. He was then transferred to Buttevant jail, and he told stories of being actually tied to the back of a Crossley tender truck and taken on trips down to West Cork.
Yeah.
Yes, there was ambush.
Yeah.
That was a fairly frightening situation.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So from there, like, the Civil War, the call to dump arms was April 1923. The ceasefire was May 1923, I think. This was a while after, but it was more about, it was the political rivalries at that stage ahead of the election, and the fishing rights was the key thing that caused the trouble.
That was the big thing. That was why he said he took up arms from day one, like, you know.
Yeah.
Well no, historians have said that the 27th of August, when that general election, that was de facto when the actual one was taken out of the Civil War. And there wasn't any more. There was bits and pieces here and there, like, but so that's why their claim was he was the last that was shot at on the 26th.
Yeah. It's a miracle he survived.
It was amazing, absolutely. Only for that nurse being there, and we haven't met that family. We're meeting them next Saturday. First time since.
This is the nurse was Mary Maher.
Mary Maher, yeah.
And she saved his life. She had experience in the trenches of World War One.
That's right.
So you're getting to meet her family.
Her grandchildren are coming to the unveiling next Saturday. Tom Dillon, the historian who had done a lot of work in this thing with me, he actually traced her and the family, and we found out that she married a Dillon man from Dwarf, and they have lived in Trinirock and Dwarf since.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. Incredible. So look, how big is the event going to be this weekend? How many are you hoping for a big turnout?
Well, there'll be, I don't know, depending on the weather, I suppose, there'll be 100 or a couple of hundred there anyway. It's going to be kind of a celebration thing, like.
Yeah.
It's going to be music and...
Yeah,
songs. So, because there was a positive outlook to all this thing.
Yeah,
like,
that's brilliant. Listen, stay with me. We also have Tom Dillon, historian, on the line. Tom, good morning to you, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Dorian. Good morning.
This is a remarkable story, a story of a miracle survival right at the end of the Civil War.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a brilliant story. You know, I was researching the field fishery case, is the case that Hawley's referring to, that went on that time,
yeah,
of the civil, around the time of the Civil War and War of Independence. And I was researching that last year, and I was actually going to talk about it at the National Civil War Conference in UCC last year. And then Hawley got in contact with all this amazing story about his father and how Mary Maher saved him. And I mean, myself and Hawley are near neighbours, because there's only a river between us. I'm from the other side of the river, from where Hawley comes from, and the fishing is the salmon fishing in the river there over generations was huge for the people of that neighbourhood, you know, because so many people depended on the river for their livelihood, and these would be people who wouldn't be in well-off economic circumstances. And you'll be talking about hundreds of people, like Hawley will tell you there in the stretch of fishery and their own farm. I think we made it out there one day, there was about 90, there were 30 boats, and there'd be three people fishing to each boat and a crew, which would be amount to about 90 people. So that was replicated all the way along the river, from the Cashin all the way up maybe to Finnoog Bridge even, like, you know, so... it was of huge importance, and the fishing rights then were controlled by the landlords, as Hawley said, the Hewsons.
George Hewson, believed to be related to Bono, believe it or not. We'll have to look into that one in more detail.
Yeah, we've never been able to pinpoint how exactly they're related, but interestingly, Hewson is buried in Dyshot Cemetery in Lictna, on the bank of the Feel, and right alongside him is buried Hawley's father and family. They're buried there as well, side by side. And he's been, seemingly Bono's been there a few times, but the Hewson himself, he was a very intriguing man. There's a good story behind him as well, you know, with the fishing rights there. He was a magistrate in the court in Listowel, and this was under the Dublin British rule in Ireland. He was one of the justices of the peace, and in 1920 he went to the Republican court he took people who had been poaching in his fishery to the Republican court. Now, if people might be familiar with the system that time, but we had Dáil Éireann established and they had the first sitting in 1919.
Yeah.
They set up their own governmental system with a police force, with a court system, it was a counter state to the British rule in Ireland, and it helped undermine the whole thing.
It did, because people instead of going to the authorities at the time, went to what they really believed were the true authorities, and it was very important, and it totally undermined the administration of justice, the British justice administration system in the country.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And Hewson, I mean, for someone of his background to go into the Republican court and seek a ruling, that was exceptional, really. Like, you know, and he was shot as well in May 1920, and he was shot. It was overfishing as well. Again, he caught people poaching in his fishery, and one of them shot him, and that was listed in the outrages. There was a list published there by Dublin Castle. What things he claimed he was the first person shot in the War of Independence, the first civilian to be shot. Now, I've never been able to properly corroborate that.
Yeah.
The story about the fishing, like, went back, you know, hundreds of years, and there was different things went on, plenty and plenty of court cases. But by the time it came to May 1924, when the field fishery case came, and Michael Costello was one of the main defendants in that, and they collected money from as far away as Tralee to kind of to be able to fight their case.
Yeah.
And challenge
Hewson's. Stay with me, Tom, and I'm going to talk a bit more about that. We're going to talk to Hawley as well as that element of it. If you have a view on this part of our history or your own thoughts on it, we want to hear from you on the programme. We'll talk more after we take these. Yeah, we're talking about the last attack of the Civil War, the Michael T. Costello commemoration, taking place on Saturday, 26th of August, 2:30 p.m. next to St. Michael's Church in Lix. Now, we've Hawley Costello, his son, with us in the studio. We have Tom Dillon, historian, on the line. And Hawley, Tom mentioned there about the fisheries. Like, did the men who fought in this area, or maybe all over to an extent, was part of their idea or ideal that they'd get the country? And the country meant fishing rights and land rights and the things that the landlords had. Was that the idea?
Yes. Fishing, yeah. It was very big in the Lixna area and the Ballydough area, all along the river.
A motivation to fight for those rights.
Yeah, because the river was full of salmon, like, you know.
Yeah.
One of the best salmon rivers in the country for years and years.
But that's not how it worked out.
Well, they got the rights, strange enough. There was an Irish solution to an Irish problem. My father, as Tom said there, there were attempts on his life. There were three different attempts to kill him, and there was an attempt to burn the Innes Morehouse down. But anyway, and there was a court case coming up, but the agents for Hewson one night came over to my father in the dark at night, coach, and said, Hewson this day has now had the exclusive selling rights of the salmon, which were mostly going to Billingsgate in London. And he offered my father half the rights of selling. And would he call off the campaign to get rid of him?
Yes.
And my father, of course, agreed. That was his, got the foot in the door by getting the selling rights of the salmon.
Yeah.
And it turned out afterwards it morphed. He got the complete selling rights. I don't know how that morphed. And Hewson didn't have any selling rights. And my father was put in, he was brought on to the Board of Fisheries in Limerick. He was a conservator with a fellow from down the river in Dyser called Josie Dan McAuliffe.
Yeah.
So by doing that, they were involved in issuing licenses. And my father made sure a lot of them went to people around Lixna.
Yeah.
Now, for instance, in our home place, in the farm, which is elongated along the river, maybe 3/4 mile around that, after a couple of years, there were no less than 30 boats fishing there. 30. Before there was only one or two from Hewson. And we just worked that out, 3 people per boat. That's 90 people.
Employed.
Employed. And they all making a living. This is after the Civil War, when the creamery was burned down and shops were burned and that. So it was a necessary...
Times are tough.
For the monthly economic boost to the place.
Yeah, yeah. And Tom, if I could ask you then, just on that case, the field fisheries case, that those rights were a key thing, I suppose, right across the country after the Civil War, when it was a new country, a new state, but, you know, property rights were still there, land rights were still there, you know, rates were still being paid and all these elements.
Yeah, you're right. And there was, you know, I think Hewson, as I mentioned earlier on about when he went to the Republican court to get his case recognised, I think he recognised that times were changing, political climate was going to be different. And then once the Free State was set up, that's how this case was born out then as well. And they had to have their rights recognised by the new order. And to do that, they had to go and they had to research all the very ancient documents going back through the centuries to prove that they were entitled to private fishing rights. The rights originally would have been granted by the English kings, and that would have come about through the Lordship of Ireland given to the Normans by the Pope at the time. So that'll tell you how far back these rights went.
Yeah.
And then they were passed on through the centuries to the Fitzmaurices, the Earls of Kerry, and on again to Lord Listowel and to the different landlords. And it was from them that the Hewsons rented them and eventually became owners of them. So the title had to be tracked back. And the difficulty in that, of course, was all these records were in the Public Record Office in Dublin, which, of course, was burnt down with the first shots of the Civil War, and all these records were lost and burned. And does actually letters exist.
That attack, the fire... how do you trace that back then? That's a whole other nightmare to try and trace back who owned what and what rights were where.
Yeah. Houston's solicitor was Matthew J. Borman the Stoll. He was a noted historian himself now, and he was, I mean, they couldn't have had anyone better really on the case for them. And he, there are letters exist from him to the keeper of the records in the public record office, inquiring for such and such grants from whatever king, and the letters, the reply would come back then that they haven't been found or they've been destroyed and they should look somewhere else. But they were still able to establish their case, and they had like almost 100 documents all the way down along grants to the Knights of Kerry, the Fitzmaurices of Lixnaw, and they won their case. But I suppose the key thing about it was that meant Michael Costello and all the rest of the local people were excluded from a certain part of the river, but, and that was a civil war in itself, you could say.
Yeah.
You know, within the context of the civil war, these were neighbours fighting against neighbour over fishery rights. But it was amazing when all that was going on, they still came together then to re-establish the fish hatchery outside Listowel, which was up there in Ballinrothery, just upriver from Listowel Bridge, and all of them came together to get that back up and running. So yeah. And that was for the benefit of everyone, you know. And it's a lovely kind of a positive story as well, and a positive ending to it, because that benefited families all the way through into, you know, into even my own time, like, you know, because people fished, the river is closed now because the salmon stocks have gone down so far. But the hatcheries that time were established with the help of the landlords in 1906. They were put back again in 1924, and the fish merchants like Mixum and like Hewson played a big part in that, because when people would sell their fish to them to be exported, so much money would be kept back then. When they'd be paid, so much money would be kept, and that would go across the hatchery.
Yeah.
And the export links as well, I suppose I should bear mentioning, to London, to mention the Hewsons were the ones that set them up first day. So, and that tied in with bringing the railway through North Kerry as well, because the fish were loaded onto the railways in Lixnaw, in the Stoll. There was even a stop on Hewson's estate at Innismore at one stage where the fish was sent, and to go off to Waterford, Dublin, Manchester, Bristol, and Billingsgate Market in London.
Yeah.
So you could be over in London eating the salmon that was caught the day before in the river field here.
Yeah.
They were that quick, you
incredible
know, so, and it was huge.
Huge economically, huge. And infrastructure for the area as well. And Holly, look, all of that, it's a story worth remembering and worth telling, and that's what Saturday is all about.
Yes, it is indeed. Yes, indeed.
So what's going to happen? Tell me when it happens and who's going to unveil it.
Well, Paul McAuliffe, the TD, his grandfather was from Lixnaw, so he's coming down to unveil it. They're going to be, as a fellow with a famous name, going to sing a song about the ballad of Paddy Murphy. It's based on a Cockman that was shot dead by the Crown forces because he killed a salmon on the River Lee in 1911. So, and the man is going to sing it, his name, Liam Lynch is his name. So, yeah, a famous man in his own right.
Yes, yeah,
We'll have there'll be music there. A man with the one an All Ireland senior medal a few weeks ago
at the Flakeyole.
At the Flakeyole, Sonny Egan.
Oh, brilliant!
He's going to be there. He'll probably have his medal around him, and he'll also probably be wearing a cross jersey. But we'll put up with that.
You'll get over that, of course. Big year for Quetta, and you know, hard luck to Lixnaw and all of that. Listen, look, lads, that's brilliant. An amazing story, and the last attack of the Civil War. And finally, Holly, the man who shot him, then they became friends after.
They did.
He visited him in hospital.
Yeah, he visited him in hospital a couple of weeks afterwards, and he was a regular caller to our house.
Isn't that incredible?
He was always brought down the parlour and given tea and maybe a salmon on the way home.
That's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Yeah. Can I just add another thing as well?
You can.
About, we'll knock on George Hewson there now, but on the positive side, George Hewson owned the land right down to Ballybunion. And actually, where I spend a day or two every week, Ballybunion Golf Course, he was the man that gave the land, donated it to Ballybunion Golf Club first day. So only for him.
Fair play.
There might be no golf club there. No.
Okay, brilliant. Well, listen, look, that's amazing. We're over time. Lads, thanks so much. Good luck on Saturday, 2:30, next to St. Michael's Church, Lixnaw, 2:30 p.m. That's the unveiling of the plaque to Michael T. Costello, Civil War veteran.